Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in the United States. That is the golden retirement age, or at least it used to be. Retirement is now a moving target, pushing well past 65, and many struggling seniors don't see retirement in their futures at all. The number of seniors in the workforce has nearly tripled since the 1970s. A majority of seniors have no pension or retirement, and half of those who do have less than $60,000 in savings. And then there are those seniors who just can't work. And so many of them struggle to pay rent, buy food, or keep the heat on. According to the National Council of Aging, over 25 million Americans over the age of 60 are economically insecure, meaning they bring in less than $30,000 a year. These older adults struggle with rising housing and healthcare bills, inadequate nutrition, lack of access to transportation, diminished savings, and job loss. For older adults who are at above the poverty level, one major adverse life event can change today's realities into tomorrow's troubles. So if you or someone you know is in this position, how are you making ends meet? And what policy changes need to happen to truly address this issue? Joining me to discuss the economic realities facing seniors are three guests. Derek Tolliver is Program Manager of the Felton Institute's Senior Community Service Employment Program. The Felton Institute provides social services with a focus on the elderly, low-income families, and people living with disabilities. And Derek joins me here in studio. Hi, Derek. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Amber Cutler, Senior Staff Attorney at Justice in Aging, an organization that uses the law to fight senior poverty. Amber trains thousands of advocates around the country and in California to help their low-income senior clients access benefits. And Amber joins us on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Amber. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And Maggie Flowers is Associate Director of Economic Security at the National Council on Aging. Maggie also oversees the Center for Benefits Access, which offers innovative programs to help older adults create a plan to build their own economic security. And Maggie joins us from Arlington, Virginia. Hi, Maggie. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have all of you, and I want to start off with you, Amber, because I just watched this amazing Justice in Aging video, and it's a video of four older women, and they are sitting around a table and sharing their stories. And the statistics are just, are frankly, just really sad. One in five women over 65 living alone in the U.S. lives in poverty. 25% of black women, 26% of Native American women over 65 live in poverty. I've already shared a couple statistics, but do you think that people who maybe don't have an older person in their life knows what we're currently dealing with?
I do think that there is overall a lack of awareness regarding senior poverty. And like you said, there are about 6.4 million seniors currently in America living in poverty. And that number here in California is even more astounding. About 20% of seniors are currently living on income that is no more than about $15,000 a year. So that's one in five seniors here in California that are living in poverty. And that's just not very well known. And that number is just going to increase. I think you said earlier there are about 10,000 people who turn 65 every day. In the U.S., and income inequality is at its highest since it's been in the 1920s. And there are some staggering figures that predict that by 2050, there's going to be 25 million seniors living in poverty. Yeah. So it's really a matter of getting that information out and considering what policies we can put in place to reduce those figures.
Maggie, the other thing that really struck me in the video were these women speaking so honestly about choosing between medicine and food. And at one point, one of the women in the video said things got so bad, she was thinking about taking her bottle of pills. And luckily she didn't, but that went through her mind.
Well, that is a heart-wrenching story, and it's definitely an issue that many older adults are struggling with, because by the time we hit our retirement years, we know how much money we're going to have. We know our Social Security benefits. We know any savings we've been able to accumulate, if any. But we don't know our true costs of living, and we don't know how long we're going to live. And that's where people get into these just terribly impossible choices of how do they cover their health care expenses, their food, their housing, you know, make any repairs to their home so they have a safe place to live. it really becomes an impossible struggle for people.
And Derek, I understand that you spent most of your career in the corporate world and you decided that it was time to give back. And now you're working on this issue, trying to get services to people over 65 who are struggling to make ends meet. Before you got into this, did you realize how bad this is and what we're really facing?
You know, I really did not realize it, Rose. I think I might have been just naive. You know, I have grandparents. I had grandparents that lived well into their 90s. And I remember my first inkling of choices for elderly when I visited my grandfather as he was getting older and my grandmother as they were getting older. Again, both in their 90s. They were living in Texas. And I remember my grandfather had a little store. But what he didn't tell me was that he had prostate cancer. Well, I knew that, but I didn't know the cost of the medications and how the family was banding together. My older aunt and uncles and my dad and his brothers and sisters were gathering money together to help him pay something like $400, $500, $600 a month for medications. Mm-hmm. And so the choice between food, living, and health care is a reality. And that hit me like a ton of bricks back in the 90s when I visited my grandfather, like I told you, and then realized that, wait a minute, this is no piece of cake. How do you pay that when you don't have any serious income coming in?
Right. And for so many people who rely specifically on Social Security, I mean, the monthly check differs, but it's average about $1,000 a month. So we're talking $12,000 a year. And a lot of people solely rely on Social Security as their main source of income.
It's a harsh reality. I mean, when you think about what it's like to get to your golden years and not have the security that you thought you would have, with the 2007-2008 economic downturn, it threw a lot of other seniors into a position they never dreamed of being in when they had to spend down their retirement, spend down their 401k, their pensions, in order to have money to survive, or else they were, in a lot of cases, faced losing their homes or have actually lost their homes. So when you think about that nest egg of being a house and having security, and now suddenly you've got to go out and you've got to account for a payment that you didn't account on. You thought, oh, everything is paid for. I'll never have this problem. Taking out second, third mortgages, reverse mortgages, all these things that afflict seniors have kind of led to where we are now, because now the senior population is growing and the number of seniors that will be entering the workforce in the future is really startling. Mm. I mean, it's really startling when you look at those statistics.
Well, more articles are coming out showing that the number of seniors in the workforce has tripled since the 1970s. Amber Cutler, do we know what percentage of people over 65 are still working because they have to?
I don't have those statistics, but I think that that's one of the ways that individuals are coping, is that they continue to work in order to get that income. And also the retirement age is getting longer and longer, so individuals are putting off retirement longer. But again, that disproportionately, the types of individuals who can continue to work differ by demographic. And so if you're a low-income individual who possibly has been working a blue-collar job, the likelihood that you're going to be able to continue working beyond the 65-66 retirement age becomes less and less. So you're more likely to end up taking your retirement benefits earlier, which means you're going to have a smaller benefit moving forward. And so we're seeing these discrepancies as well in terms of the populations that can sort of have that luxury of working longer, though we don't want that to have to happen. But then also these populations that have to rely on benefits that are reduced because they have to retire earlier.
Hmm. And Maggie, what would you add to that? I went to a concert in San Jose last week, and I think it was on a Tuesday night. I was leaving at 12:30. And I noticed that all of the greeters looked to be over 75. And I walked up to one woman and I said, Hi, I don't mean to be rude here, but why are you here at 12:30 on a Tuesday night? You know, how long have you had this job? And she said, I've had it for 15 years and I cannot leave because of the health care. And then I took my niece to Disneyland last year and noticed the same thing. The majority of the workers seem to be over 65 or 70, and the workers that I spoke with said, I can't leave the job because of the health care. How common is that?
You know, there's definitely a large number of seniors who are trying to stay in the workforce or re-enter the workforce. Perhaps they retired, thought that they had enough money to cover their needs, and then discovered that they did need to return to the workforce. And we've seen in our work with our community partners across the country that it really takes a bundling of services together to help someone cover their basic expenses, because just because someone would like to work or recognizes they need that income, they can't always find a job, or perhaps they're not able to work anymore, right?
Right.
So we've worked with community-based organizations to help people with a holistic assessment and think through what benefits and services are available to help them cover their health care, food, utilities, housing costs, perhaps look at ways to help pay down debt if they're experiencing credit card debt or other forms of debt. Maybe looking at how they could safely, if appropriate, tap into their home equity if they own their home. And really just think through what's the best scenario for their circumstances.
And Derek, what would you add to that, just in terms of the services that people need? As Amber said, the California poverty rate among seniors is 20%. It's the highest in the country, mostly due to the high cost of living. It costs almost $24,000 for a senior living alone in California to meet basic needs, but even that sounds low, especially if you live in a city like San Francisco.
Oh, it's almost ludicrous. If you look at the cost of housing in San Francisco and you talk to someone and they tell you that I just went and looked for a studio apartment and it was $2,000 a month to $3,000 a month for a studio apartment. I'm not talking about a one,
right,
two, three bedroom. And so even if you had a three or four bedroom for $3,000 a month, that's way out of the range of a lot of fixed income seniors. So part of what we've looked at is a 7-point assessment. We have an economic security initiative center at Felton Institute, and we got involved with this through an initial grant through the National Council of Aging. And what we are able to do there is able to do what we call an assessment of where a senior is and where they stand financially. But there's 7 points that we look at, and if you give me a second,
sure,
I can actually outline what those 7 points are. The first thing we look at is where they are. What type of public benefits are they aware of, and what kind of public benefits should they have access to? And so what we do is we take that assessment and we look at where they are right now. The next thing we do is we look at the job situation, the employment situation. Are they employable? Do they desire to have a job or retraining? The other thing we look at, their personal finances. Then we look at their health. And then we look at legal services. A lot of times seniors are embroiled in legal disputes, mm-hmm, around inheritance, around property, around a lot of things that really overwhelm them. And they don't have necessarily an attorney on retainer to protect them and their interests. So we help them in that way. The other thing is we look at housing. And then finally, we look at the aging network services. So there are a lot of services that seniors can avail themselves to, which almost kind of overlaps with what some of those public benefits are. But they have to be aware of them. And there's so much information. And a lot of seniors are disconnected from social media and the internet. And so there's a phobia there. So there's a technology gap that we try to make sure we bridge for our seniors by bringing them in and having a really user-friendly environment that's more inviting for them so it doesn't overwhelm them. So these are some of the things, like I say, that you look at and you realize, wow, if I had 7 things that could help me, how do I get access to that? Who's going to help me with that? And that's one of the things our Economic Security Initiative Center does at the Felton Institute.
Can you share some stories about what it's like to help people over 65 get jobs, because it's hard enough for people in their 50s to get jobs in a place like the Bay Area.
Yeah, you know, and the reality is with the millennials, it's hard enough for people over 40 to get jobs in San Francisco. You know, we have this tech boom that's going on right now. And if you look at over 2,000 startups and you look at, say, a typical company like even a Salesforce.com, which is a major, major multi-billion dollar player that didn't even exist 20 years ago. Okay, so there are so many jobs now that have titles that didn't exist 6 months ago. So how could a senior be competitive in that environment when this is the reality of what exists today? So part of what we have to do, at least with our Senior Community Service Employment Program, it's also known as CSEP, what we do is we try to identify seniors that have skills and talents that need to be trained or focused their energies on a certain employment sector. And usually it's some kind of community-based organization that we initially have what we call host training relationships with. And so they agreed that, listen, we will take on seniors, and they have a subsidized training stipend that we provide for them. And this is all through the Department of Labor, and the National Council of Aging received a grant, and we're a subgrantee of the National Council of Aging. So part of what we do is we'll see maybe 125 to 150 seniors a year. And at any one time, we have maybe 85 to 95 seniors that are actively enrolled in a training program. And so part of the challenge is to get them in the right training program so that they can get off the stipend, which is a minimum wage, and get into a fully engaged and employed situation for them. The paradox is that once a senior makes a certain amount of income, then there's issues of excludable and includable income. What that means is seniors are well aware in a lot of cases, and sometimes they aren't, but most of them are, have some knowledge that they don't want to lose benefits. And that's one of the problems.
Right.
That suddenly they don't make enough money to survive. They get a part-time job. It kicks in, and then suddenly they add some other income that they have, a Social Security benefit or something else, and suddenly they're over the limit. And so they are very much aware of being in this tightrope situation where they really don't have any net below them. And so they are very paranoid about what they can and can't do for fear of losing benefits.
Mm. Derek Tolliver is program manager of the Felton Institute Senior Community Service Employment Program. Amber Cutler is senior staff attorney at Justice and Aging. Maggie Flowers is associate director of economic security at the National Council on Aging. Today we are talking about the economic realities facing seniors, people over 65. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in the United States. The number of seniors in the workforce has nearly tripled since the 1970s. A majority have no pension or retirement, and half of those who do have less than $60,000. California has the highest senior poverty rate. 20% are living on about $16,000 or less a year. That's in California, where the cost of housing is so high, even outside of the Bay Area. I actually heard that Santa Rosa has had some of the highest rent increases in the last year in California. So we'd love to hear from you. If you or someone you know is in this position, how are you making ends meet? What is your story? When, say, for example, 20 years ago, did you see this coming? What policies need to change to address this issue? And how did we get here? How can we get out of this? Because with 10,000 people turning 65 every day in the U.S., as our guest said, in 2050, we're expecting 25 million seniors, just seniors, to be living in poverty in the U.S. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So Maggie Flowers, again, you're working with the National Council on Aging. It's a big question, but how did we get here? What major changes have you seen over the last couple of decades to get to the point where we now have 6.5 million people over 65 living in poverty in the United States?
One of the biggest things that we've seen as a change has been the decline of the defined benefit pension. And so people don't have access to that pension that they may have had access to in the past. Instead, we are relying on people saving for themselves through their 401k or other option that may be provided through their employer. However, not all employers provide them. And so you have people who may not be educated on how to best save for themselves or may not have money to put aside either, who are needing to navigate and decide exactly how much to save and to figure out how much they'll need for the rest of their lives. And to put it in perspective, on average, women live 22 years after the age of retirement at 65, and men live an additional 19 years. And many of those are not in good health. And so it's difficult for a person to think about covering their current expenses, trying to send their child to college, trying to buy a home, trying to pay down their own debt, and wrap their mind around exactly how much money they need to save for those retirement years.
And Amber, what would you add to that? I mean, I think about union jobs in the good old days that provided really good pensions. You know, half of my family were sheet metal workers, and thanks to their union job, they now have pensions. But if they're in their 20s or 30s today, they probably wouldn't have that savings account.
That's exactly right. And as Maggie said, the disappearance of the pension means that individuals are relying primarily on Social Security benefits as the primary means of their retirement. And then the recession hit, and so a lot of people dug into their savings and into the equity in their home just to make ends meet during that time. And so they don't have that savings that traditionally you might have relied on moving into your older years. And then additionally, one of the factors that's really hurt seniors today is the fact that many of the safety net programs that seniors rely on have been reduced over the years. So the Older Americans Act has lost funding. And here in California, there were catastrophic cuts to the SSI, Supplemental Security Income, and the Supplemental Security Payment. And so with those catastrophic cuts, we saw seniors who were living just above the federal poverty line moving down to about 90% of federal poverty, which is less than $12,000 a year.
Can you tell us more about those cuts and how politicians justified them?
Sure. So in 2009, when the recession hit, they decided to cut a lot of the public benefit programs across the board. So we saw cuts in the Health and Human Services, and so we saw cuts in the payments to seniors under SSI, SSP. We also saw cuts in health care with the in-home supportive services, which provides in-home assistance to individuals living at home to help them maintain independence at home. So there are these widespread cuts. And we know that those programs have been effective in helping raise seniors out of poverty. Since we started the war on poverty nearly 50 years ago, we've seen incredible increases in people moving out of poverty. But then we flash these programs, and what we see is millions of people moving back into poverty. And so hopefully, I think moving forward, we're going to see, as we're becoming more economically secure, that there'll be more reinvestments in these programs. And we saw a small indication of that in the governor's budget, the California governor's budget for this coming year, in which he at least restored the cost of living for the supplemental security payment here in California for the coming year. While that was a small movement, it only equates to about $4 per individual, it was some momentum in getting that SSP restored for really low-income seniors.
And Maggie, we are talking about California, one of the wealthiest states in the country run by mostly Democrats. So if we're seeing those kinds of brutal cuts that affect seniors in California, what are we seeing in more conservative states?
Well, across the country, there have been a variety of different attacks on public benefits. One of the biggest things you've seen for older adults, maybe 60 and older before Medicare eligibility, is that states that aren't choosing to expand Medicaid to help people who maybe are unemployed or don't have access to employer health insurance to enroll in the Affordable Care Act programs and Medicaid through that, and help them cover their health expenses until they are eligible for Medicare. Additionally, at the federal level, we continue to see attacks on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is a critical food support for people of all ages and definitely something that seniors rely on to help them cover their food costs. And the Older Americans Act programming, which provides critical supports, things like congregate meals and home-delivered meals to seniors, continues to be flat-funded and needs to be expanded in order to cover more seniors.
Maggie Flowers is Associate Director of Economic Security at the National Council on Aging. Amber Cutler is Senior Staff Attorney at Justice in Aging. And Derek Tolliver is Program Manager of the Felton Institute's Senior Community Service Employment Program. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the economic realities facing seniors today at a time when the majority of people over 65 have no pension, no retirement, and then half of those who do have less than $60,000 saved. We'd love to hear from you. What is your story, and what changes do we need to see to improve the lives of people over 65, and how can we get there? We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in today's conversation on Your Call. On the telephone, sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to yourcallradio.org, the website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone, you may call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up in a half hour, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. Phone companies versus the police, going to that Paris rock show after the attacks, the rude remarks of a boxer-turned-politician, is he really sorry, and Jeb Bush's tweet of a gun. Lots to talk about on BBC World Have Your Say, one half hour from now here on KLW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with writer Lindy West about feminism and pop culture. You might remember West from her story on This American Life, where she confronts one of her most persistent online trolls. Lindy West will join us to discuss coming of age in a popular culture that is hostile to women and how keeping quiet is not an option for any of us. And then Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the economic realities facing people over 65. The number of seniors in the workforce has nearly tripled since the 1970s, and so many people are struggling to pay rent, to buy their food, and keep their heat on. If you have a story you'd like to share, actually, we've got full lines. You can call us in a couple minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Amber Cutler is Senior Staff Attorney at Justice in Aging. Maggie Flowers is Associate Director of Economic Security at the National Council on Aging. And Derek Tolliver is Program Manager of the Felton Institute's Senior Community Service Employment Program. And Derek, before we get to calls, you wanted to throw out a couple solutions.
Yeah, there are some things that seniors can do right away. First of all, if we have over 60% of our seniors and disabled, especially here in the city and county of San Francisco, that are going hungry, there's no reason for that to happen. There's a program that under our Economic Security Initiative Center that we really promote and help seniors to successfully navigate, and that's the CalFresh program. And that program was formerly known as food stamps. And now you use a debit card. So there's the stigma attached to standing in line and having to pull out your food stamps and figure out how much to pay. That has gone away. And so a lot of times what happens is seniors are unaware of exactly how to fill out the application, and they are denied because they missed a box. They forgot to check something. So part of what we do with our Economic Security Initiative Center with the Felton Institute is provide those seniors with a case manager, somebody that works with them to look at their entitled picture. I talked about those 7 points earlier. So we're doing that successfully. We're seeing 450 to 500 seniors a year. And that is something that is free of charge. There's no charge for that. The other thing to look at is there are certain programs that seniors are not aware of around dementia and Alzheimer's. And we've taken on a new initiative to actually work with some residential senior housing developments in South of Market. And what we've been able to do is successfully train people that are working in that environment to recognize signs and symptoms of dementia, depression, and the fact that seniors are maybe staying in their room and they're not coming out. They maybe came into the housing program at the age of 60, and now they're 80, and suddenly their mental acuity has declined. So we provide them with a school of knowledge around doing mental exercises, physical exercise, nutrition to help stave off the debilitating effects of dementia and Alzheimer's. So again, that's reality with growing old. And especially if you're part of the LGBT community, there's another thing that you have, the paradox of not necessarily having family, okay? Because you didn't necessarily raise a family. Sometimes in that situation, the problems are exacerbated. So there's a special concern that the Felton Institute has around making sure that we embrace all of our seniors.
I'm really glad you brought up the LGBT issue. Are you finding that more and more now?
Oh, we absolutely.
More isolation?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. As you grow older and you don't have necessarily an extended family that accepted you from the beginning, and you've kind of embarked on your own almost your entire adult life, and suddenly now you're in the twilight years, and then you don't have access to a lot of the things, the support systems around you, you can grow into a despondent, very despondent person. And then if you have the effects of dementia and Alzheimer's, oh, my God, you've compounded the issue, and especially if it's undiagnosed. And you're living in a residential environment. And so that's why what we do, we feel, is very important.
And you talked about people who don't have access to computers. How can people get in touch with Felton?
One of the key things I always say is that we have a convenient number to get in touch with us. There is a number for the Economic Security Initiative Center, and that's probably a good starting point. And that's 415-379-1043. And that's 415-379-1043. That's the Felton Institute Economic Security Initiative Center. And you ask for extension 2700.
Okay.
Okay.
And all of these services are free, and I will repeat that number throughout the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for that information. We've got full lines talking today about the economic realities facing people over 65 in the U.S. Let's hear from Ed in Berkeley. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's really hit in December. Like before, I could just spend on food, and I guess at the end of November, it's like I've come up short every month, and so now I'm paranoid, and I'm like cutting back on food, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get through the month. I have a little bit of savings, but my people live a long time, and I'm not sure how, once you start doing that, then you don't have anything in case there's something terrible that happens. I'm trying to get work, but I'm on SSI, and the cutbacks have been just severe. We got these minimal 1.5% increases for a number of years when it was up to 3% and 4%, and then lately when the economy turned south, they just didn't give us any raise for like 3 years, and that's like 10% less over 3 years because it was 1.5 during that time, and then the insult on injury. The legislature of the United States decides not to give us any money, and then what we get in our little slip is we go to a lot of extremes to make sure that you're keeping up with the standards of money. And this year there wasn't any inflation, and before you used to be able to go out for dinner and spend, a fancy dinner at $7. Now the hamburger is $7. Inflation is just...
So, Ed, are you mostly relying on Social Security?
Oh, yes. I'm totally relying on social SSI.
You know, thank you so much for calling in, Ed. And let's talk a little bit about what resources are available for people like Ed. And also, Amber, can you talk about these Social Security benefit cuts? I met a woman over the weekend who said her check used to be around 800 or 980, and now it's 800 a month. So,
As the caller was saying, he is relying primarily on SSI, and SSI is a safety net program. It's administered by the Social Security Administration, but it's for really low-income seniors and people with disabilities. And the maximum federal amount that you can receive is $733. And as the caller said, there hasn't been a cost of living adjustment for this year. Here in California, we do have a program that pays a slight increase, a supplemental payment, the state supplemental payment. That payment today is $156, and that was what was cut back in 2009. It used to be $233. It was cut down to $156, which means that seniors are living on a 90% below the federal poverty line. So in terms of policy solutions, I think that there are some. I think on the state level, the governor's budget proposal, like I said earlier, for 1 year he's increased the cost of living, which means like a $4 increase to the state supplemental payment. There's some movement within our legislature, Assemblymember Cheryl Brown, Assemblymember Tony Thurman, and Senator Kevin De Leon have all put forth measures that would not only reinstate the cost of living adjustment every year, but would also restore those cuts so that we can get people back up above the federal poverty limit. So back from $156 at least up to the $233 that they were getting back in 2009.
And Derek, do you have any other recommendations for Ed, who says that at the end of the month he's practically doesn't have money for food?
Yeah,
this is happening in Berkeley.
Yes.
Are there services for him in Berkeley?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. Rose, as far as Ed is his question and it's a reality. It's a tragic reality that a lot of times you're making those choices about whether or not to eat at the end of the month, and you don't have any money for food. That is why it's absolutely imperative that someone like Ed has a contact with an organization like the Felton Institute Economic Security Initiative Center. There are other programs throughout the Bay Area that deal with areas around food like CalFresh. And the San Francisco Marin Food Bank is one of the biggest sponsors of the CalFresh program. And again, remember, Ed, if you're listening, to take advantage of that. Don't go hungry. Don't make a decision between rent, your medications, and food. You don't have to make those choices. There are some programs out there that, with assistance, we can ensure that if you're qualified, you will receive that benefit.
Now, the Felton Institute is in San Francisco, but can anyone in the Bay Area call?
You can actually, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So again, the number, and this is a free service, 415-379-1043, 415-379-1043, extension 2700. Maggie, what about the bigger issues here? I mean, what needs to change at the federal level so people don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to get enough food in the wealthiest country in the world?
Well, one big solution that many advocates are working on is strengthening Social Security to ensure that people have enough money to cover their basic needs. And that is an effort that continues, and hopefully one day we'll move forward on that front. Another big piece is saving as much as you can when you're younger, and the new MyRA accounts can help people do that, to put aside a little bit of money so that when they are older, they can have some savings to rely on. And one broad thing I would encourage people across the state who may be listening to look at is, if they are struggling to make ends meet, there is a free online resource that they can use called Benefits Checkup. And that can be found at benefitscheckup.org. And there you can screen for 2,000 different federal, state, and local benefits to help cover many of these basic costs of living. And so I'd encourage you to take a look at that. And if you don't have access to the internet, perhaps talk to a loved one who can walk you through it.
Okay, so since you brought up Social Security, can we just talk about this for a minute, because it's really important since we're in a presidential year. According to the Motley Fool and Market Watch, most Republicans running for president propose cutting benefits even more, either by reducing monthly checks or raising the retirement age. I understand Donald Trump has not come out with his plan other than to say we're going to save Social Security, whatever that means. But Maggie, what about this? Republicans want to cut benefits.
The biggest thing I would like to draw on there is this whole idea of raising the retirement age. As was mentioned earlier on the show, this is just not an option for many lower-income people. If you've been working a blue-collar job, if you're a construction worker, retail, or a server in a restaurant, and you're on your feet all day, by the time you hit 62, 63, 65, you really need to take a break. Your body can't continue. And often retraining to find another job can be very difficult. So as we hear people talk about raising the retirement age for Social Security, raising the claiming age for Medicare, these are things that we really need to listen carefully to and really encourage people not to do, because it really does hurt the people who have the least in our country.
And on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton want to increase the payroll tax cap of $118,500. Sanders wants to increase benefits by about $65 a month for most recipients. He wants to boost the minimum benefit to $14,300 a year for someone who has worked for 30 years, and wants to use the Consumer Price Index for the elderly to calculate the cost of living instead of the Consumer Price Index that's used today. And then, again, according to MarketWatch, Hillary Clinton wants to improve benefits also for caregivers. Amber, is there anything else that strikes you about the differences between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton on Social Security?
There isn't anything that strikes me. I do think that the idea of addressing senior poverty requires more than just looking at income. While that is the most flexible certainly a critical component of reducing senior poverty, we also have to look at the other areas where seniors are spending, and that's in housing, that's in healthcare. Healthcare is really large. Mm. And so making policy adjustments to the healthcare system where seniors aren't paying so much out of pocket for prescription drugs, they're not paying so much out of pocket and under the Medicare program. So I think it takes looking at everyone's policies in conjunction, where we're not just like looking at something in a vacuum. And those kind of like a puzzle piece and bringing together a puzzle that we're not going to tackle senior poverty by just one big policy initiative.
Amber Cutler is Senior Staff Attorney at Justice and Aging. Maggie Flowers is Associate Director of Economic Security at the National Council on Aging. And Derek Tolliver is Program Manager of the Felton Institute Senior Community Service Employment Program. And thank you again, Ed, for calling in. I hope this information will help you. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Excuse me. Apparently we're going to have some feedback here. Hope you can tolerate it.
Yeah, if you can just turn your radio down.
Just a second, I'll do that.
We're just waiting for Greg. Sorry about that.
Hope that's better.
Much better. Thanks, Greg.
Okay. First of all, I would like to ask that one of your guests mentioned something about benefits, a national program. If she could repeat that at some point, that would really be helpful, if you know what I'm referring to.
The benefits at the national program?
Yes, right. She said something about there was a national...
Okay, that must have been... Maggie?
I believe that was me. I think you may be referring to our benefits checkup website, which is a national resource that anyone can use across the country to screen for a variety of benefits and services. And that can be found at benefitscheckup.org.
Great. The other thing is, I'm a longtime SSI recipient, and I mean, your guests obviously know how bad the situation is, but I can tell you from firsthand experience, and I can relate to what Ed was talking about, the programs are so extremely, frugal that it's just really, I don't know how people survive. I mean, if I wasn't living in subsidized housing in Palo Alto, I wouldn't be able to survive. I'd be homeless, I'm sure. And the worst part about it, too, is the health care, because of the Medicare issues related to Social Security. The rules are so punitive and restrictive that you almost feel like a criminal when you're dealing with Social Security. So it's bad, and I think, lastly, I just would say this. The Democrats are in control in Sacramento. The state has got record income coming in. Yep. Brown's built up a $12 billion rainy day fund or whatever. I just don't understand the thinking of these people when it comes to SSI and people who are disabled in terms of, you know, why there just isn't some understanding of the needs these people really have. So it boggles the mind when I think about the politicians in Sacramento.
It definitely boggles the mind. Thank you for that call. Derek, what about that? It does boggle the mind.
Yeah, it's a situation where, give you an example.
Do seniors have lobbyists?
Seniors don't have enough clout with their lobbyists. And that's one of the problems associated with growing old. You know, I'm 62 years of age, and I understand, I'm beginning to really understand, it's becoming crystal clear to me. Give you an example. We talked about how many seniors have access to knowledge about training programs and supplemental food programs and assistance on medical related issues and housing. Well, one of the things that has to happen is that the private industry sector has got to step up to the plate and make a firm commitment. To give you an example, if we know that seniors as they get older may not be as inclined to have some of these fast food restaurant jobs or, you know, hard labor jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, why is there not a commitment made by private industry to say, well, we know we have X number of hours of administrative clerical work, consulting services that we need to have. We're going to allocate a certain percentage of that money that we're going to spend anyway and make sure it's allocated and earmarked to provide employment and training opportunities for seniors. In other words, make a step up to the plate, private industry, and make a commitment to seniors. If you know you're going to hire 2,000 new workers this year, what's so difficult about saying we're going to make sure that 5% of those jobs, 150 of those jobs, go to seniors? And we're going to work with them to accommodate them. They may not want a 40-hour work week. They may want a 20-hour work week. So that's part of the flexibility that has to come in. The other part of it is on the medical side. If we had the average dentist, physicians in the Bay Area take on a certain percentage of seniors who were below the poverty level and provide free services, do you realize we would wipe out, literally wipe out, all healthcare issues? And then pharma companies coming in and saying the same thing. We're going to donate X number percentage of our profits back to providing affordable health care, medications, etc. for our seniors. There's nothing stopping us from doing this on our own. And it doesn't take a legislative process to do that.
Right. But don't you need changes in order for people? I mean, they're relying on a $900 a month check and then it goes down to $800. I mean, that means that there might not eat that month. That, so you definitely need policy changes.
You absolutely need policy changes, but we also need a change in the mental attitude that we have towards providing for our seniors. In other words, if the public pressure mounts to the point where we actually begin to make changes in terms of how we make our critical decisions about how we run our businesses and how our businesses are going to address certain issues, then what happens is we hold our elected officials accountable to change the policies to make it more reasonable for seniors to expect not to have income count against them. In other words, we talked about includable and excludable income. Seniors are afraid of losing benefits. Let's eliminate that. Let's eliminate that and make it a policy where seniors are given I don't want to say preferential treatment, but they're treated as if they were valuable contributors. We stand on their shoulders. They should be taken care of.
And Sumitra writes in, it's not only been the cuts of the past 7 years to HHS and its programs in California, it's also the criminalization of these programs. She says, especially under Jerry Brown, the administration has initiated fraud programs which cost millions of dollars a year to sustain, which make it even more difficult to receive benefits. She says she's not been able to hire anyone for the past 3 months as a caregiver due to the draconian enrollment procedures. With the privatization of Medi-Cal in California, there are millions more on the program. It's made it even more difficult to get care or a doctor that'll participate. If you have a severe chronic disabling illness, you are out of luck. Amber Cutler, final thoughts. You know, we're talking about the fact that older people don't have lobbyists in Sacramento or Washington. I feel like this is going to hit this country in the face, because with 10,000 people turning 65 every day, as you said, by the year 2050, we're expecting about 25 million people over 65 to live in poverty. So what's the best thing people can do to try to change what we're currently facing?
Great question. I was just thinking about on the state level, we're working really hard to get that SSP increased and restored. And there's a great group right now called Californians for SSI that are working to get legislation through that would not only increase the benefits again, but also reinstate that cost of living. On the federal front, in terms of SSI, the last caller had talked about how restrictive the eligibility requirements are, and they are. They haven't been updated since the 1970s, and so we have, in order to be eligible for SSI as an individual, you have to have resources under $2,000. You can hardly have any kind of income coming in other than your benefit, or your benefit's going to be reduced. And so right now there's also legislation federally that was introduced by Elizabeth Warren and others that would update and restore the SSI program so it could increase on the federal level. And so with those two things, we might see some increases. And I do think that there's an opportunity for seniors to get involved and have their voice heard, particularly here at the state level where they can get involved with Californians for SSI.
And Maggie, final thoughts, about 30 seconds?
Sure. I think I want to echo what she just said, and that is speak up. You know, oftentimes people don't know that seniors are struggling with these issues, and as more and more people learn, hopefully we can not only support the programs that are already available, but strengthen them, because we'll be more aware of the real challenges that people are facing in retirement.
Maggie Flowers is with the National Council on Aging. Amber Cutler is with Justice and Aging. Derek Tolliver is with the Felton Institute. Again, the phone number if you need some help with services, it's a free service, is 415-379-1043, extension 2700. And then also we had a caller about SSI. If you're receiving SSI, you cannot receive CalFresh benefits in California, but other household members may be eligible. So we wanted to make sure we had that information out there. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with writer Lindy West about feminism and pop culture. You might know Lindy West from her story on This American Life, where she confronts one of her most persistent online trolls. West will join us to discuss coming of age in a popular culture that is hostile to women, especially fat, funny women, and how keeping quiet is not an option for any of us. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.